Oh, hello world. Hi, how are you? I am Samantha Jones Starling. I'm a two-time author, I'm an authenticity coach, and I'm the creator of the We Explore to Restore Travel Academy, a school for life around the globe, starting right where you are. I'm also the creator of this podcast with the same name, We Explore to Restore, where we talk about travel, wellness, and spirituality. And today I have on my show my favorite friend, Shipra, my favorite friend in Malibu, Shipra Wilder. Shipra is an amazing human who I've known since the very beginning of my awakening. We actually met when I was in treatment in California, and she was one of the group therapists. And she was so much fun and so much light. And I've always admired her and always loved everything that she had to teach me. And luckily for me, we've gotten to stay connected over the years, and she has continued to be my friend and support me in all of the work that I do. Shipra is also a painter. She is a writer. And as I mentioned, she lives in Malibu. And I actually bring that up because I have a question that I want to ask her about that later. Hi, Shipra. How are you today?
How are you? It's such an honor to do this for you. And my gosh, I'm just like you say, we've been on this journey. I mean, you've been on the journey. I've been in the background, but just so proud of you and everything that you've done and you're doing and that you're going to do. And so, yes, this is honestly, this is sometimes you don't see the fruit of the work and you are the fruit. So
Oh, well,
I
thank
appreciate
you.
you.
I forgot to tell the audience what we are doing on this second season of the We Explore to Restore podcast is we're doing something I'm calling Three Questions with SJ. And what I've done is I've asked my guests to bring three questions that they want to ask me, and I brought three questions that I want to ask them. And the reason I've done that is because I wanted to bring a more collaborative experience to my podcast where we just get together with interesting humans who are learning and growing and finding wisdom in their lives. And I thought that if we got together and had these great conversations, that we would entertain and enlighten at the same time. So that is the point of what we're doing today. Shipra, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay. Everybody's chosen to go first. I love it.
We'll do the coin toss.
Right?
Actually, I have to put my glasses on. Okay, what if anything would you have done differently if you had to do this travel, wellness, spirituality journey over?
Ooh, I would have gone slower. I would have gone slower. And I now have the knowledge to know that I need a lot more rest than I thought I did. And it was one of the things that I learned while I was out there traveling around. And for those of you who don't know me, I just spent the last 7 years traveling the world solo by myself. And I went to 25 different countries. I lived in Well, I lived in Mexico, I lived in London, I lived in Croatia, I lived in Costa Rica, and I lived all over America, and I traveled all over the world. And so that's what Shipra is referring to, by
It's been
the
such a fun, I feel like I've been on the journey, like watching all, I'm like, where's she going next? What
way. I
is she
know.
doing? This is
I'm one of
amazing.
those people, they don't ask me how are you, they ask me where are
Where are
you?
you? Exactly.
Exactly. And to be honest, I have been so many places because it is part of my spiritual journey to go to all these places. And what I've uncovered is that I'm something called a grid worker. And grid workers, we go all over the world, and in each location, we pick up wisdom and we also drop off wisdom. And sometimes it's intentional, like I learn something from a teacher, or other times it's just things that I absorb from the community or even the land, just connecting with earth. I'll pick up things. And like when I was in Hawaii and I was hanging out with the hibiscus flowers and I was noticing, and it was so great. I had a 2 week quarantine when I first got there. Everybody was like, "Oh my God, what are you gonna do?" And I was like, "Love every minute of it."
Exactly.
I could do that shit standing on my head. But while I was sitting there with the hibiscus flowers, I realized that flowers, trees, all the plants are growing and dying at every second of the day. even at night, even in the daytime, and so are we. Mm-hmm. And it just, and all of a sudden it occurred to me. And so things like that, when you're like, oh, you know, and so that's why I say I would go slower so I could connect with the land and my environment a little bit more. Because to be honest, in the beginning, I was still coming out of doing things the way that men do things, doing things the way that people on TV are doing things, yeah, doing things that were out, that were different from my alignment, right? And just doing like what I had seen on TV and mm-hmm. things like that. And so I was like, go, 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 and taste everything, which I still, you know, would love to do, taste everything every time I go somewhere, but with more breaks, with more downtime to process what I experienced and really absorb it. Because like, there's places that I went that like, I remember, but I don't really, you know what I mean? I want to go back. And so I would definitely, that's such a good question. I would go slower.
Good. Yes.
Do you want to go, I'm sorry.
Okay. You can ask me a question.
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. No, you can ask me. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have them on my phone. Okay. All right. Now, this is like, it's all one question, but it's three questions in one.
Okay.
Okay. I
remember. No.
Because you're an artist, right? And the thing, actually, when we met, I didn't know you were an artist. You were a therapist to me. And, you know, you kept your personal life personal, which you should. But as I've gotten to know you, I've seen you transform out of that industry and start to serve yourself more and more, which I have loved to watch myself, right? Because you're on your journey too. Mm-hmm. And one, I love your paintings. I just love them so much. And so that brings me to ask you, what moves you to create?
Honestly, it was a soul revival. I had been an addictions counselor for 10 years, and I got so caught up in helping everybody else, I lost myself. Mm-hmm. And towards the end, and I know you knew that, I just burnt out. I couldn't function. I wasn't serving myself or anybody else. And I was getting physically ill. I went to the emergency room way too many times, and I loved my job. I mean, it was my life. I loved it. I loved everything about it until I burned out. And what I realized is towards the end, there was so much just within the different personalities in the group, there was so much trauma coming up that it triggered all my trauma. And I said, I have to take care of my childhood stuff. Because I had glossed over it, but never went deep. And it was a group towards the end. And one of the clients said, you're not even listening to me. You're just telling me what to do. And I just went, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. You're absolutely right. And I knew it was just, you know, compassion fatigue. I wasn't doing myself any good or anybody else. So I had to quit. And I took it was a good almost 17 months before I actually started feeling normal again, because I completely burned out. I was sleeping 12 hours a day, and you know, I'd get up to do the dishes and go back to sleep. And so it was that journey. But in the midst of that, I went to art workshops through Santa Monica College, and I remembered, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's right, I'm an artist. Because initially I went to art college and I was a production artist in advertising for 15 years. And that was like my soul revival, and it revived my soul. And I realized this is who I am. And I paint intuitively. I'm a recovering perfectionist. So I can do the fine art, but I just had to get out of my head and out of myself. And I just paint intuitively. And it's just, it's life-giving. And I pour my heart and soul into everything I do, hoping that people receive that and get that and understand it. And it's almost like they're like healing paintings, I feel, because it's healed me. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that other people get healed through that. And so far, I mean, people are like, oh, it really moves me. And I'm like, thank you. I just painted it, you know? So it's been a great and incredible self-awareness tool, and it's really good deep.
Yes. I have to say, that's how I feel about writing too. Once I figured that out, I was like, oh my God, I have been a writer the whole time and I just didn't know. But I have a follow-up question about your art, because one of the things that I wanted to ask you, do you create like on a timeline? Like, do you say, okay, I'm going to paint on Monday, Wednesday, Friday this week? Or do you only create, like you just create when you're inspired?
I create when I can. It's been a long journey. I've moved around a lot. I was homeless for 6 months. I'm going through a divorce. There's a lot of things that are happening. So I paint when I can, where I can. I'm at a place now and I could only paint outside just because of where I was. So it was just weather permitting, because it's Malibu and the winds would come up and the rains would come up and I'd set up and break down. So now I'm inside a little bit. So I paint when I can, where I can. When I do have a studio again, which I will someday, I will be painting a lot more and experimenting a lot more, because there's so much in here that has to get out and it hasn't yet.
But yes. Anyway. Wow, that is fascinating. Well, you know, and I asked that because as a writer, and I would imagine as an artist, as a painter too, you know, there's two different ways of going things. You know, some people as writers, they'll sit at the computer every day and force themselves for however long they need, you know, however long they've set that agreement with themselves. I'm going to write for 1 hour every day, or like Stephen King writes for 2,000 words every day or something like that. Now, I shouldn't have even brought him up because he's a professional. Like, this is what he's designed to do. But you know what I'm saying? And so I just wonder, because I am not somebody who can force myself to sit down and do something like that. Now, that being said, I have so much inside like you that's coming out. I literally don't get writer's block because there's always something to say. And if I can't get the words from my brain onto the page, then I know what to do with myself to open that faucet. Mm-hmm. Do you have that same experience where you're like, okay, I feel like painting or even writing, because you're a writer too. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, what, do you know how to unlock yourself if you get stuck?
I do. With painting, I just start and it flows out. And I think it's the same thing with writing. And again, with writing, I started taking classes, memoir classes, autobiography classes, and like I had no idea, you know, again, it's like a little, I think what our hopes and dreams as little children, or, you know, elementary, whatever, are there, but we don't know when they're going to come out. And that was I always knew I was a writer. I always knew I was an artist, but when you have nothing to show for that. And so I think any type of creative, it's in us and it just takes time to come out. And I took a writing workshop at one point, and the advice that they gave was write 15 minutes a day. Because if you can do 15 minutes, the rest will come out. Mm-hmm. I have not done that. I've done it because I've been published a few times through Santa Monica College, the emeritus program. And it was through classes that we were given an assignment or a prompt, and everything would just come out. Now, when I do sit down eventually to write my book, I'll probably, you know, have more of a time constraint. But I think, you know, as you say, I think have to be inspired, or the inspiration will come. I just trust the process. When I start something, it comes, and I don't beat myself up, you know, if it doesn't come. Even with a painting, I'm, you know, what I'm feeling, I paint, you know, and I'm just like, it's gotta be black in this. And then I look at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, but that was part of an emotion that I had to get out there. And then I just paint over. And I think it's the same with writing. You can always change, you can always edit, but it's getting your emotions and your feelings and, you know, whatever on the page.
Yeah. Mm. Yes.
I should be more disciplined. I'm just not right now.
Yeah. Well, that's why I brought it up. It's because I've been studying something called human design. And there are some people on the planet who have what we call the gate of structure. And there are some people who do not have that. And for people who do not have it, I'm one of them. And you know, the world is be disciplined, do the same thing every day, be consistent, right? But I don't possess that. I can't do a 30-day yoga challenge. That doesn't work for me. No. I can't do
30 days. 2 days done.
The only reason I got through treatment was because I was trapped in there. And that's why I went, because I knew I needed somebody to hold me still, exactly, while I did it. And that's why you ask for help, right? Because when you can't do things on your own, you ask for help. But yeah. I bring it up because, like I was saying, and so for those of us who don't have that gate of, you know, structure and dedication in that way, it took me, you know, I was thinking about it for a while. I was like, how can I use this to my advantage? How can I embrace my design while also still producing writing and still producing art and, you know, still moving forward towards my goal of finishing a book, right?
Yeah.
And what I realized is that what I can do is show up consistently with love for myself every day and allow that love and service, self-service, to look different, mm-hmm, right? So I will move my body every day, but it will not be exactly the same thing. I will feed myself every day, but it won't be the same, you know? And so I can show up with love, and the love that I give myself is the gift of grace and allowing myself, yes, to choose, you know, to be like, hey, body, hey, soul, hey, Samantha, mm-hmm, what do you actually need today? Rather than forcing myself into some box of structure that is maybe not, is going to work for me on Monday, but not on Friday.
Exactly. And I think the thing too is just letting go and being okay with that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it took me, you know, I joke, it's like, I feel like I'm just starting my life. I'm, you know, I just turned 60 and I'm finally realizing who I am and realizing my DNA is different. And I've never lived a conventional life. And I've just finally got to the point saying, you know what, I'm not going to explain my lifestyle. I'm not going to defend my lifestyle. And, you know, I don't fit in the box. I never have. And it's, mm-hmm, always been, and I don't know if it's just, you know, being creative or, you know, how we're wired, because I can be analytical. I've owned and operated several businesses. I've done the way of the system, and mm-hmm, I can do it, and I can do it really well, but it's not who I am. You know, and it's always just feeling like the misfit, the one that didn't fit in, because everybody's going one way and I'm off doing this, or I want to go this way. And, you know, people can have a 9-to-5 job. I did it. It goes against my grain. I think we have this flow that we have to fit into, and, you know, be it called, well, oh, you have a bohemian lifestyle, or, you know, a friend was telling me, you're like a cotton ball in the wind. I'm like, exactly. And where I land, it's going to be amazing. And that's just, I think over time, when you realize your life, you know, wherever you land, it's going to be amazing. And sometimes it's not, but you make the amazing out of it, you know, wherever you, it's like bloom where you're planted. And then, you know, and I think when it's not so amazing, that's the time to go in. That's the time for introspective and just going inside. I know the word is not coming up. And that
introspection.
Yes, thank you. It's like, and I realized I don't process mentally like other people do. I'll be having a conversation. Somebody will say something, and I'll literally be formulating an answer in my brain and realizing it's taking too long to get this answer out. So then I'll spew something else out that doesn't have anything to do. And then I'm having to explain, and I'm realizing that, and I actually got a picture of this, because I'm thinking, what? I know I'm not ignorant. I'm actually quite intelligent, sure, not intellectual. Yeah. And this picture I got is somebody will say something or ask a question. And for me, it's like a Polaroid. It's all there, but it takes a while to develop, and it hasn't developed yet. But in the developing process, I think that I have to, because I think it's taking so long, I have to have an answer for it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I could just like sit there and just go, wait a minute. okay, because the answers are in my head, but it takes a while to drop from there to here to come out.
And yeah,
I don't know if that's just me, but that was like the picture I was shown, because I'm like, what, why can't I, you know, why can't I get these answers up? Why can't I communicate and articulate the way I'd really like to? Because, you know, there's people that are just brilliant at that. And I just, that would be my superpower. If somebody said, what is your superpower? I would want to be able to communicate and articulate exactly what's in my head so that I can say it to somebody that they could understand it at wherever level there are, wherever level they are.
Oh my gosh. I do know exactly how you feel. And to be honest, what I'm thinking about right now is that I really want to do your human design chart so I can tell you how to, so I can help you with it. We'll talk about that after the show. So, you know, I know how you feel, because I get, and it's so funny because I'm such a great orator and I'm so good at talking and words just come out of my mouth, right? And there's actually something called the freak to genius channel that I have. And what that means is when somebody is interested in what I have to say, I sound like a genius. But when I just start talking without anybody asking me what I think, I sound like a freak. And so I have to be real careful, but the freak should just talk, right? And she just throws things out. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah, it's funny. But you know, that's the thing. It's like, you know, we have so many different ways of communicating. And I think it's interesting that you were saying, you know, that you wish that you could be somebody who could like answer on the spot, right? But then there's a bunch of people out there who can answer on the spot that they're probably saying, I wish I could express myself with paint, right? I wish I could express myself with writing, right? Mm-hmm. We all have our different attributes that are meant for us.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's actually really helpful, because I think it's like, I want to do everything well, you know? And it's like,
well, we can't. Exactly. There are some things we're very good at and some things we are not. And when we accept who we are and just embrace what we're good at and accept that we can't do some things, then we, you know, it's the surrender, right? Surrender to who you are.
Yes.
It's when we try and fight things and cultivate things, basically like you're trying to grow something that has no seed.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's a good point.
And that's you. We all do it. You know what I mean? We all do it. And the unfortunate thing is that we do it as families, we do it to the children, right? Mm-hmm. And we force them into growing into something that they did not want to be also. Mm-hmm. And that is what happened to many of us, including myself, you know? And so, you know, like you, when you were in your job that you loved so much, but still, it wasn't exactly what you wanted to be doing, right?
It was both and. Mm-hmm. I loved what I was doing, but it's intense. Yeah. You know, it's intense.
Do you think that if you have, do you think that the burnout came from lack of self-care, or was it just that it was just too many years doing it?
I think it was lack of self-care. I did almost zero self-care. Mm-hmm. And I just kept on going and kept on going. And I would say, yes, do you want to do this group? Yes, do you want to do another group? Yes, do you want to do another group? And because it's so emotionally taxing, because because I connect with people and mm-hmm. When I walked out the door, I would have to emotionally detach or shut down. And it can be healthy. It can be a great healthy coping mechanism at some point, but it's unhealthy when you're constantly having to detach and detach and detach, because I would get, you know, it's somebody like you or somebody, you know, and you know, in addiction, people die and it happens all the time. And then you're just like, okay, shut down, emotionally detached, move on, shut down, emotionally detached, move on, shut down, emotionally detached, move on. And I didn't do the self-care. I didn't talk with anybody. I didn't take care of myself. I didn't go get the massages or go cry or do what I needed to do.
Or take breaks.
Yeah, take breaks. I didn't take a break. And, you know, they kept on trying to get me back. Can you come back? I'm like, no, I can't. Please, no, I can't. I just knew it. I would die. Mm-hmm. I literally was feeling myself dying. And that was, I told my former husband, I have good news and bad news.
Yeah. Did you cry after you ended it?
Oh yeah. I did so much healing. So much healing. And I needed that. I needed to be able to do nothing. And that was hard because it's like, well, the rent's still due. The bills are still due. I said, I don't care. I will die if I don't take this time.
Yeah.
So much healing, and it was beautiful. It was beautiful chaos.
Wow. Right. That's amazing. Okay. I have a follow-up question to the creativity questions that we were asking. Do you create anything that's bad just for fun?
Anything that's bad.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like just paint, just to paint and just for fun without the intention of it being good.
The terms good and the bad, I try to avoid because people go, I'm bad. Yes. But I understand what you mean. I just create. I feel like it's maybe good for me. Maybe some other people don't like my stuff at all. And it doesn't matter. I just create just to create.
Yeah.
So whether it's good
or every single piece you do that, you know, from that.
It doesn't really affect me or matter to me whether I think it's good or bad or somebody else thinks it's good or bad. I just create to create because it's in me. Mm-hmm. It has to get out. And there's, you know, pieces I love. Most of my work, they're like my children. They're my babies, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I'll work on it for months and months and months. And then I'll just like, all right, you know, it's done. I can't do any more on this. Mm-hmm. And so I may not think it's the greatest thing and somebody will just absolutely love it. Or pieces that I absolutely love, they're just like, oh, that's nice. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm.
I find that happens to me all the time with my writing. The things that I think are just like, I'm like, this is it. This is the thing. And you were like, whatever. And then the thing I just like wing, you know, out and I'm like, whatever. They're like, I love it. I'm like, I don't understand. That's the same thing. Okay. I think it's your turn.
Okay. So when you're having a down day or you're in a funk, where we all have those days, what do you do to get out of it?
Oh my gosh. I literally wrote that exact same question on my list. I literally did word for word.
Wow.
Well, to be honest, you know, and I have to do this because I'm an author who just published some books. I have to plug myself right now because this Ladder to Lightness, actually, Ladder to Lightness, Be the Author of Your Own Story, and We Explore to Restore. You can find this on Amazon, everybody. But I bring this up because this is what I do. And this has 7 principles in it to serve myself. And I start with grounding. Mm-hmm. And then I go into resting. And I go into nourishing with discernment. And then I go, you know, and well, I go grounding, cleansing, right? What can I let go of today, right? What is not serving me today? Whether sometimes it's an idea, sometimes it's outside pressure, anything like that. So I ground myself, then I release, then I nourish with discernment. And then I nourish myself, and then I rest. And then after I've done all that, then I usually have the right energy to play or create and then go out into the world. And so I was, you know, that's kind of my process. And sometimes within that cleansing section, that is where I will talk to a friend and cleanse my soul by releasing the words that are trapped inside, right? Cleansing energy of some kind. And then sometimes that also includes like a good shake or a good dance, like some kind of movement in there. But play and movement are kind of in the same one. And so, you know, I usually will just, if I'm feeling bad, I'm like, okay, which one of the principles do you need to fill today, right? Mm-hmm. Where have you been like letting up, or where have you been lacking, or something like that? And so I just mm-hmm. kind of hit them all like that until, and usually I know where I need to go. You know what I mean? Like I wake up and I'm like, oh, you know, and I know exactly what I need. But other days I don't, you know, and I have to just keep trying things until they work.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Good. I like the grounding, because mm-hmm. I think, you know, when we're in a funk, and I just experienced this, and I'm just like, I'm like happy. This is like, this is the first time I've been free in 40 years and everything's going well. And then I just got in this funk and I'm like, what? That came out of nowhere. And then like my body would start hurting. I'm like, what's happening here? Wow. But that is the thing, is to ground and yeah. to ground and to just go down that list. To nourish, to, you know, and that's what I forget. Okay, let's shake the body. Let's dance. And sometimes I'll do that. I'll put on dance music. And mm-hmm. so that's very good wisdom.
Well, one of the things I've learned during my studies over the last few years is that grounding provides us emotional stability. Mm-hmm. And that's just true, right? Let's just let that sentence hang there for a minute. Grounding provides us with emotional stability. Mm-hmm. When we are grounded, we don't say things like, oh, I need a fucking drink, right? No, you don't do that, right? Because you're grounded in yourself. You're like, oh, I could have a drink, mm-hmm. right? There's nothing wrong with having a drink. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, but when we're like, oh, you know, I need this. No, that's yeah. not what you need right now, right? Or when we're grounded, we're driving and, you know, we don't get pissed when people cut us off in traffic, mm-hmm. right? Because if we're grounded, we're emotionally stable. And emotionally stable people do not get upset yeah. when somebody
I'm getting the off. Book, but I'm writing it down.
I love it. And so, you know, it's just, and the thing is we get ungrounded so easily and we're unaware of it, right? Just picking up, just that ringing of your phone, right? At any point in the day when our phone rings, we become ungrounded from ourselves because we are immediately drawn to something outside of us. Yes. Right? Having dreams ungrounds us, right? Yes. Watching television ungrounds us. Checking social media ungrounds us. Mm-hmm. Going anywhere with other humans has the possibility of ungrounding us. Mm-hmm. So it's really, and that's why it's actually the first principle. And to be honest, like maybe the most important of all of them, even though I believe they're all equally important. I don't know if I could say both things at once, but it's true, right? They're all equally important, but grounding is the most important, right? But like, and so it's important for us to ground ourselves in the morning, you know, when we wake up, into who we are. And that's why I like doing the journaling pages in the morning or a morning meditation, right? That's a grounding experience that people are aware of, right? But even like if you're a person who wakes up and you need coffee, you can turn that into a grounding experience with a little bit of intention. Mm-hmm. You can turn anything into a grounding experience with a little bit of intention. But the thing is, like, we do that one time a day when ideally for the best emotional stability, it's a regular practice that we add in our days everywhere we go, right? When we drive, when I go from one place to another, the mm-hmm. first thing I do when I get most places is go in the bathroom and wash my hands and let the water ground me, right? Or taking a couple deep breaths, right? And I'm a highly sensitive person, so I get overwhelmed in transitions, right? Like if I walk into, like, I remember the first time I noticed that I was in Bali and I went to meet some friends at a beach club. Mm-hmm. And I got out of the car and immediately they were like, right, the host, how can I help you? Where are you going? Who are you trying to? And I was like, I need a fucking minute. And then I was like, okay, just give me a second. I took some deep breaths. I'm like, okay, now you may escort me into the crowd, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know where my people are. Mm-hmm. Just walk me around, you know?
But like, and those are good boundaries. Because I think a lot of times we're just like, okay, we have to do all this. We have to, you know, that's a good boundary, knowing I need to ground first and then you can escort me.
Yeah, but I didn't know that. That was the moment I learned it. Because it was so in my face. I was like, ah!
Now you've learned it.
Where's the bathroom?
Exactly.
And so, and funny, when I think about it, back when I was drinking and doing drugs, mm-hmm. I did the same thing with the cocaine. Honestly, by mm-hmm. taking it into the bathroom and being by myself for a minute,
yeah.
that was my ritual of grounding into myself. Mm-hmm. Now I do it now without the drugs, right? But I was still naturally doing it then and taking moments to myself and be like, okay, you know, I'm filling myself up with artificial power, artificial mm-hmm. connection. Mm-hmm. But regardless, I was still seeking the same experience
exactly.
or connection to myself.
Exactly. Even in the midst of that, you knew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think it's my turn. Yes. Ooh, okay. Oh, I think this is going to be so delicious. I love this. Okay. Because I have definitely two more questions. Okay. Yeah, we got time. Okay. So I learned about love languages from you, and I will never, ever, ever forget this, right? And I've told you this before, but in fact, I always use you as my example for acts of service, because that is, I don't know if that's your primary or secondary.
My primary.
So for people listening, Shifra loves it when her husband brings the groceries in from the car. And that is, that's the example that I always use. And they're like, oh, that's nice. Okay. But like, I want to know, because it was when I first started awakening to, you know, everything that I know now, mm-hmm. the most powerful information that I got in the beginning was the four agreements, which is basically my Bible now, and love languages. Mm-hmm. And I know why I think they're important. But I would like to know, why do you feel this book and information is important to know about ourselves and our close relationships?
I love the book too. I actually kind of stumbled upon it. And because it works so well, I think people, when somebody knows their love language, and most people don't know, some people haven't ever heard of the book. It's by, I believe, Gary Chapman.
That sounds right.
I hope I'm butchering his name.
We'll link it below for everybody. Anyway, exactly. It's on my website, and I'll link it below if you guys want to buy it.
Okay. And so there's five love languages. There's acts of service, physical touch. I hope I can remember them. Quality time, gift giving. And it doesn't mean, oh, I love gifts. It's the meaning behind the gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And
words of affirmation.
Words of affirmation. Yes. And so a lot of times when you're with a partner, we each have different love languages. My love language, my first one is acts of service, which means once I get overwhelmed and I often don't know how to ask for help. So when somebody will do something for me, it just takes the burden off. If somebody loads the dishwasher, or when my husband would, you know, I'd drive up and he'd come down and get the groceries, or he'd fix something or hang a picture, or things like I wanted done, but I didn't have the time or didn't know how to ask for it. That is my love language, because I take on a lot. So when I get help, that's my love language. My second one is physical touch. I love, and it's not just about sex, you know,
mm-hmm.
sex or sexuality. It's, I love being, I love massages. I love touching. I love, you know, other people touching me. I mean, I love physical touch. I love, and it was tough during COVID because I want to hug everybody and they're just like, whoa, get away. And so that is my love language. And my husband's, it's hard to say because he's in the process of being my former husband, wonderful man, love him. Mm-hmm. We'll always love him. Anyway, long story short, I won't even go there right now. That's for a whole other podcast. But anyway, his was words of affirmation and quality time. So mm-hmm. we're completely opposite. Mm-hmm. And there was a Valentine's Day where I went to a workshop with, her name is Dr. Erica Scott, brilliant, brilliant therapist. And she had a workshop about writing love letters. And I wrote this love letter to my husband, you know, for Valentine's Day, and he read it and started bawling. And I'm like,
I bet that was everything.
His love language is words of affirmation. And because it's not mine, I didn't go there. You know, I didn't, it wasn't natural for me to affirm because it's not my love language. Not that I couldn't do it, but it was just, it didn't feel natural. Some people, that's their love. They're like, oh, you're the amazing and you're wonderful. And it just wasn't mine. So what I realized is I need to affirm him more. You know, that's his love language. And his other one was quality time. And so we'd hang out together and we'd be watching Netflix. And like, I'd be looking at my phone and he'd be like, we're watching Netflix. I need you to put your, and I'm like, why is he, what is wrong with you? But what I realized, he wants quality time. He wanted all of me, not just to sit next to each other, you know, but all of me. And that's when you understand somebody
else wanted your soul present.
Yes.
That's what quality time is for anybody listening, right? It's not that you're emotionally available.
Exactly. And so again, when they're not your love languages, it almost felt like too much energy for me to put out. Although I love, you know, being with them and being with people, it's not my love language. So knowing somebody else's love language and being available for that and being willing to make that work is everything in a relationship. It's everything in a relationship. And also knowing your love language and being able to ask for that. So that book helped me tremendously, just to really like know myself and know other people and what the difference between the love languages.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I learned from it, you know, because I spent the last 7 years learning how to serve myself so I could help other people do the same thing. And how I use the love languages is because my primary is words of affirmation and my secondary is gifts. And so to, you know, continue on the question you asked me before, how do I serve myself when I'm in a dark hole? I have to talk to myself and say nice things all the time. I have to say the things that I wish somebody else would say, right? I have to say, Samantha, this is a beautiful dinner that you made for us. Samantha, this is, you know, I'm so proud of you for doing that, right? I have to speak to myself often and I get to buy myself gifts, which is really nice. But it's, as you said, it's not, you know, and I this is a funny story. I was telling this guy that I was seeing, this Australian guy that I was seeing, about, you know, this love languages and what they mean. And I was telling him gifts. He was like, ugh, gifts. And I was like, it's not like going to the mall and buying gold, right? I was like, now you can do that. I was like, but that's not the point. I said, you know, it's something like, you know, we were talking about having fish for dinner and you bring me a lemon, right? Right, exactly. I was like, you know, or that you went fishing and brought me fish to cook, right? To nourish, like just anything at all that you thought of while you weren't with me and you bring it to me to like physically show me I thought of you. I have affection for you. I care for you. Whatever, right? And I've often wondered if I just inherited that from my family. But as you said, that's another topic for another podcast to unpack that. But you know, I want to tell this I know I want to tell another little story because it just came up in my life this week. There's a friend of mine who lives in Chattanooga, and we have been friends. He worked for me and we were friends then, and you know, it obviously doesn't work for me now, but we have been able to maintain our friendship even through all of my growth and changes and awakenings, which he might be the last one left. I don't know. I have had to change everything, including all my friends. But his birthday was recently. And for the past few years, on his birthday, I have sent him something through Amazon, you know, like $15, like a t-shirt, right? Or a book. Last year, I sent him the Four Agreements and a hockey t-shirt, I remember. Mm-hmm. And then this year, I was like, oh, it's his birthday. Let me get him a card. And it was because I, like you, I just recently came out of a bout of homelessness. So I'm being frugal as well. And so it was like, it was $3.50. And I was like, ooh, should I even spend that? But I said, but he's such a good friend. I wanted to. So I bought this card and I wrote in it. And then, you know, and I know him very well. And so, like, you know, I like decorated the outside and put red lipstick on and kissed it, you know, and put like SWAK, you know, like when we were in middle school, still with a kiss.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This whole thing, and it gave me so much joy, right? Because I'm like, oh no, he's good and low. I love him. Well, I couldn't find his address. And so I texted him and I said, for some reason, I can't find your address. What's your address? He's like, what are you sending me? And I was like, don't worry, it's nothing. He's like, you don't owe me anything. I'm like, I realize that, but I was like, you may remember, since you've met me many, many, many times, that I'm the kind of person who likes to give gifts and express my love for my friends, you know? I said, I'm just being me. And then he said, okay, well, I'm going to tell you that it's always made me uncomfortable. I don't enjoy receiving gifts, and I love you, and I know you love me, and I don't need that, and I don't want that. And he advocated for himself.
Good for
and
him.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Right. And him. I sat there looking at the card and my little heart was crushed, right? Like my little girl inside me. But then I was like, no, we are not going to be crushed. I said, we are going to rejoice in the fact that I responded back to him, I will love you in whatever way you want me to.
Yeah.
And I don't know what his love language is at this point, because it's not words of affirmation and it is
exactly.
And then I asked him, and when I said that, he said the most heartbreaking thing. He said, I honestly don't know what would make me feel loved right now. And that's his journey to figure out.
Yeah.
And my love for him was allowing that space to be true. And not trying to fix it and not trying to force the card and not trying to do everything. Now, did I throw the card away? No, it is sitting over there. And when he comes to visit me, I will give it to him then. I think I'll like put it.
No, he doesn't want. I love this. Oh, I found the truth of it. I'm still going to give him the card.
I don't know. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll burn it. I don't know, but I couldn't. It was so funny. It was such a funny card.
And he may be in another headspace at that time too.
Exactly. Exactly. So I'm going to hold on to it and see. But, you know, that's why I brought this whole thing up, because I wanted to talk about how we can use it to our advantage and how we can give the gift of allowing people to be loved the way that they want to be loved and not the way that we think they should be loved.
That's huge. And that's a really, really good statement. And because we have these internal rules, how we think things should happen or things should go or people should act or what people should do or how we should love them or how they should love us. And they're our internal rules. They're not necessarily true to another person.
Yeah.
And I think the best thing, and it's hard to do, man, is just give somebody grace to be who they are.
It is hard. Because we get our feelings hurt and we want to take care of that. And we want to put that on somebody else.
Yeah. And I think that was, I mean, it is, you know, in addiction counseling, as you know, that's the most valuable thing you can do is to let somebody be who they are, because that's a safe space. If you're always saying, well, don't do this or don't do that, or you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that. People know what they need to do and don't need to do inside. I mean, they may not be a glaring neon billboard, but I think everybody knows. It's just getting to that point or that place where they feel safe enough not to be judged or not to be pushed, or just to let them come to themselves in their own terms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I want to just make one more point, because my best friend who lives in LA, she is not words of affirmation. Like a text message melt. She like sometimes just even having to answer a text message melts her brain. She's like, no, right? But she's very loving and she knows me. And one year for my birthday, she sent me a book of poetry about friendship. Oh God! And get a gift in the mail with words of love in it. Oh, I was like, you know what I mean? And I will never forget that, right? Because that was her giving me love in the way that I needed it to be. and the way that I receive it. And she knows, I don't know if she knows it consciously, you know what I mean? But she knows what I like, and she's so good at it. And so I just wanted to bring that up because, you know, we don't, like you were saying about writing the letter, you know, like sometimes it can be hard to stretch ourselves in ways to love our friends in the ways that they, that matter. Mm-hmm. But like her husband, when he just cried, and then I literally like lost my mind when I got it. Like, you know, if we
that's
can.
That's the thing that touches your heart and your soul.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, and once you're able to give that to yourself, and then you're able to give it to other people too. And that's why I think it's so important to learn what our own personal love language is, so we can self-serve. And once we are self-served and full and grounded, then we can be a part of the world in an elevated way.
Yeah. And it's almost, honestly, it's almost like a drug, you know, in a sense that it's so, and not in a negative form. It's like when I'm being held or spooned, mm-hmm. or whatever, I mean, mm-hmm. that's, it's just like, you've shot me up, you know, yeah. and it takes a while to, it's just like the endorphin rush, the feeling of physical touch, mm-hmm. is that's my drug, you know, yeah. And it's a good drug, and it's a safe drug, and it's a,
yeah. And I'm wondering right now if you have a weighted blanket in your life.
I don't, because I'm flipping them on, and I just, you know, and I'm past menopause, I think, you know, it's been, gosh, that was, anyway, it was 10 years of hell, but I got them under control. But I'm just, I think because I'm flopping around so much, sometimes when I have like a really good night's sleep, and somebody else mentioned that, so maybe I'll give it a try. Mm-hmm. When more than one person starts mentioning things to me, I'm like, okay, maybe you better listen. Maybe their ideas are better.
Those are the angels sending you messages.
I know, because yeah. I love just that, because that's my heart. That's mm-hmm. my love language. If somebody just pulls yeah. me in and hugs me, I'm just like, oh my gosh.
I know. I love it too. And spending the last 7 years, as you said, going from home to home all over the world, and you know, a good bit of it in the beginning, in the beginning I needed to be alone, like literally every minute of the day, because I had been so overwhelmed with people, you know. And then, as you know, in 2020, you know, that, and I was like, okay, let's go deeper, you know. But that is when I got the weighted blanket in my life, because I was so missing physical human touch, and having that blanket on me at night, my body's like, oh.
Note to self, order a weighted blanket on Amazon.
I'll send you a link. You don't even have to research it. I've literally read every single review from every single blanket on there. And picked out the best one with the highest quality organic bamboo cotton. You know what I mean?
Like, send me the link. I'm there.
I got you.
That's awesome.
Okay. Is it my turn or your turn?
I think you just
have time for one more. What's
okay.
that?
I think you just asked me the question.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even remember what the question was, but did I answer it? Okay. Good. Okay. What is the best advice you've ever been given?
The thing you're afraid to write that.
That's a good one.
And I love that, because it's about expressing everything, mm-hmm. about expressing your fear, about expressing, you know, the it's about connecting to authenticity, mm-hmm. right? I authentically am afraid to write this. Okay, well, let's do that. You know what I mean? And like, let's get out, you know, what, for whatever reason that you're afraid to write or express or whatever that fear is, that's where the magic is to connect to that and allow it out. Now, we don't have to share everything that we write, mm-hmm. but we have to share it with ourselves and express it for ourselves, so we can know who we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cathartic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it propelled me. And the thing is, I wrote a lot of things that I was afraid to write. Mm-hmm. I did, and I wrote for years to heal. Mm-hmm. And then I shared some of it, but not all of it.
Yeah. That's good.
And that's the thing, is a lot of people get hitched up, like, oh, I'm writing this, I have to, no, you do not. You don't have to share anything. You don't know anybody, anything ever, right? None of us do.
Exactly.
Except yourself, right? You do owe yourself self-connection, self-awareness, self-attention, you know? And if you're afraid of yourself, then you're afraid of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Good one.
I want you to answer that same question.
So a lot of good advice. I would say challenge the lies, because a lie left unchallenged becomes your truth. And I would say that ad nauseum in groups, because a lot of the times we'll think certain things and we believe that they're true about us. And, you know, like I thought I was stupid for so many years. I thought I was just ignorant. And it's because my learning style is very different on how I was raised or went to school. I'm a visual learner and a tactile kinesthetic learner. And so when you're, you know, forced to sit in a classroom and you're not a morning person and you're given sugar and thrown in a room with a bunch of other people and they're getting it and you're not, you just think you're an idiot. And I grew up thinking that. And then I'm sure people said, oh, you're stupid or whatever, because I just never got good grades. And so I believed that about myself. And then, you know, I would sing when I was a little kid, and, oh, you have a horrible voice. And, you know, not, yes, I sing off key, but I bet if I went really deep and had a voice coach, it wouldn't be too bad. But there's just certain things that are either spoken into, you know, by somebody, spoken over you, things that your parents said, you know, you'll never be good. I mean, my parents didn't say that to me. They said it to my brothers, but there's certain things that catch on and you believe it to be the truth. And I had my dear, dear friend and mentor, she's passed away since, Dr. Maggie Faulkner. She told me that. She says, is that a truth or is that the lie? Challenge the lies, because if you don't challenge the lie becomes the truth. And people grow into that. You know, my brothers grew into, you know, you're idiots and you'll never amount to anything. And they did in their own way, but they're both deceased right now because of choices that they made during their life. What is popping up on my screen? This is weird. I'm sorry. So yeah, challenge the lies, you know, because we have this negative self-talk, constant negative self-talk. And so now when anything even comes in, it's, you know, I call them the forces with voices, you know, something that would say you're stupid or you're this or you're that. And, you know, I went back to college because, you know, I had to get a degree to, in order for addiction counseling. And, you know, I graduated, you know, summa cum laude, you know, because, and I'm like, I am intelligent. I always have been. I just never had the confidence or the courage, or just knowing who I was. I always thought I was an idiot. And so, I think we're all like that. We all have in us what we really truly know, but it's been, we believe the lie. So I don't know if that made sense. But.
It does. That is a very insightful answer that I think will support a lot of people listening. It really is. In fact, there's a book, I'm sure there's plenty of books, but there's a book that somebody gave me just before I left America that talked about that. And what, it's the same question, but she phrases it, is that true? You know, and there's like a whole bunch of like, you know, homework, whatever that goes with it. But basically the question, is that true? And I think we learned about that too in treatment with the CB, cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, that's part of that, is questioning the tape that's running through our heads. And then, and you know, and really unpacking it to see, is it actually true or not? Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And it's the negative self-talk. And I remember I worked with, the kids at risk, and so what we do is they'd have a notebook and I'd say, now write down, just try to remember, anytime you say something negative to yourself, write it down, And so they did, and they came back, and the next week, just tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of things. And then I said, okay, for this week, anytime you say something really positive or, you know, affirming to yourself, write that down. And they came back and there'd be like maybe a page. And I said, this is the negative self-talk. Like you say, this is the tape. So is this true? If this is not the truth, so write the opposite. Really, what is the truth? And challenge those lies, because we're believing lies.
Yes. And we're believing lies that aren't even our own. They were given to us by the outside world for different reasons, like what we think we should look like, or what we think we should do, or what somebody else thinks we should do, or, you know, what the American dream is, like all these different things that we're living up to. You know, is it true for you? Ooh, this is such a good conversation. I could talk to you all day. Okay, we're gonna finish it up with this one last question that I'm dying to know, and it's a lighter one. So, this is where I was talking about in the beginning about Malibu. Okay, what I want to know is, what is something about living in Malibu that would surprise America to know? Like, what's it, you know what I mean? Because, like, we see on the TV, like, what it's like living in Malibu. But, like, you are a real person living there. And I want to know, like, what would we be surprised to know is happening in Malibu?
You know, it's interesting, because I thought this once. There's a lot of sewage problems that, you know, you go by, because a lot of, we're on septic, and it has... Is it septic? The tanks that have to be pumped. Yeah. And so most of Malibu is. And so, like, you'll get out of your car somewhere and you just smell the sewage. And it's like, this is just such a beautiful place. And, you know, but then there's this septic thing. And I think a lot of the times I kind of equated that to people. You see these beautiful people, the glamorous people, the movie stars, the celebrities, the people. And underneath, I think there's a lot of septic, and and I think because it's Malibu, because of where it is, the beauty is just, it's magnificent. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people have this septic stinky problem that maybe is dealt with or isn't dealt with or needs to be dealt with.
Covered up with perfume.
But yet they have this facade. You know, this is, you know, where I live, and this is who I am. And not everybody, I mean, I can't generalize that. But I was thinking of that once, and I'm just like, you know, what a gorgeous, you know, amazing place, but oh my gosh, you know, the whiff. And so I would, you know, that's just what I came up with.
That makes a lot of sense. It really does. And what a fascinating and accurate analogy.
And I think too, is for me, Malibu is, it's a city of refuge. Malibu is it's a healing city. And that's why there's so many rehabs there. I mean, there's just something about the land, about the beauty. And I try to run away from Malibu. I did. I was gone for almost 2 years. And, you know, I came back on a pet sitting gig and just fell back. And I mean, it was like, she just embraced me. Of course, the environment was gorgeous. The place that I was at, you could see the ocean and the mountains, and it just embraced me. And just being able to go, you know, and walk on the beach and, you know, and just cry your heart out to the, you know, the thunderous waves, you know, of the oceans. And I wrote a poem about that, The City of Refuge. On just how much I just love the city, and there's the good and the bad. I mean, there's 75 mile an hour winds the other day, and, you know, patio furniture is blown into the other yard. So that's, you know, there's beauty, but I think when there's beauty, there's always chaos. There's always struggle. There's always, you can't have one without the other.
That is so true. Thank you so much, Shifra, for spending your precious time with me today. I loved talking with you. And for anybody who's still listening, you know the deal. Like, comment, share, and subscribe. And all the links to everything we talked about will be posted below if you're watching this on YouTube. And if you're listening as a podcast, thank you so much for giving us your attention. And everybody out there, if you need any healing, And if you're struggling on any terms, I have a book that can help you, The Ladder to Lightness. And also you can work with me one-on-one. And if you can't do that, try to find some way to love yourself today and be a little extra kind to who you are and where you are and surrender to the love that you are meant to be. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.